and good morning to the department, the administrator of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, and the delegation, and the rest of the house. Honourable members, to remind you, our agenda this morning is quite a full agenda, and I hope we can be done by 12:30. I have to run to the Parliament Finance meeting also. I've welcomed you already. The apologies are Honourable. There's a couple of our members that will be late, and the apology from Nolusungu, and I think that's it. The others are late. The meeting today, honourable members, will look at a briefing from the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Thereafter, we will engage with the report, and we hope we can do so. Let's see how we do with an hour, Dr. Corollison. Let's see how we can do within an hour. Thereafter, honourable members, we will be dealing with the bill. We've agreed in the last meeting that the department will come back and the department will give us a briefing on their response to the submissions as well as the research review, etc. They will tell us the rest of the things. Anele, can you establish what happened to the state law advisor who was going to talk to us about the bill, not the bill, the Paja, as well as the, what was the other one? The poppy. Yes, they were going to respond on that, if you can find out where the two of them are. Or maybe they'll come a bit, just find out if they're on their way. And then thereafter, honourable members, we'll end the meeting with, after we've discussed the bill, we will then talk about the trip that the committee will undertake on Friday to Russia. May I establish, Anele, we will be having intelligence will be coming here?
A protocol liaison officer, Chairperson.
The protocol people will talk to you about intelligence for the trip, which is the usual thing that's supposed to happen, if it doesn't happen in your other committees, but it's supposed to happen in every committee. And that's the sum total of our meeting. Is that in order, honourable members? Your heads are shaking, and thank you for your support. I'm going to hand over immediately to Dr. Corollison, who will introduce us to his team. I'm sorry that I have to sit here for that reason, but also the thing has moved now. Over to you, Dr. Corollison, and welcome.
That accompany me are the executive of MISFAS. In the interest of time, I will ask them to introduce themselves quickly before I get the names wrong. So, Tasneem?
Tasneem Salasa, acting COO.
Ashwi Rajkumar, CIO.
Morgan Nyuantiwa, acting CFO.
Nancy Naido, chief risk officer.
Thank you, colleagues. Today is exactly 2 weeks since I started at NISFAS as the administrator. The terms of reference for my appointment had been gazetted, and I think the members are familiar with that. But just to say for now, there were two important items that I had to pay immediate attention to. One was to look and assess the backlog of 2017 and 18, and on the basis of plans that we had to develop. We were then had to convince the minister to open up the 2019 application season. She gave us 10 days to do that, but I think after 8 days we had a meeting and I was able to put some statistics forward to her and some of the plans that we had made. And she was sufficiently convinced to agree to the opening of the 2019 application season, which then happened on the 3rd of September. So for the past 2 weeks, most of our time had been consumed with clearing the backlog, understanding how the backlog came about, clearing that, and to plan for the opening of the 2019 season. It was always the idea that once we had these pressing issues out of the way, that we will spend a bit more reflective time on developing new processes, map processes, to make sure and understand the business of this was properly, so that we design properly going into the future, so that this, what happened with this backlog, don't reoccur into the future. As I will point out in the presentation, we certainly did not have that luxury, and certain issues had to be addressed almost straight away, chief amongst which would be the disbursement process, because that posed the biggest risk, and that was also the subject of our audit finding that led to the qualified audit, as you will become known soon. So just to give me a space to warm up, the reason many people ask me why I took this position was because of the importance that I view education of addressing societal issues that we are all grappling with. And I'll just single out one point there particularly. The unemployment rate among youth is 50%, and amongst graduates is 10%. So it shows that if you have higher education, the chance of you finding a job is quite easy. But due to some of the, not easy, is better, some of the work that I've done at SARS point out that although 50% of the youth are unemployed, what is masked amongst by the statistic is that even if they are employed, they work only for part of the year. So the problem is actually quite severe, and therefore our investment in education cannot be underestimated. And certainly that's the wishes that I got from many stakeholders, that we have to make this NSFAS work and work properly for the country. So in addition to that, of course, in many countries that have restored their economies did that on the basis of making sure that they have the necessary skills. So there is absolutely no question in our mind that we have to get this vehicle going and working very well to support the education infrastructure. And the approach that we followed when I arrived there was to look at the education as a system and not to look at it from an isolationist point of view. And therefore we spent a lot of time the past 2 weeks to talk to various different stakeholders and to see how we can assist each other to make this education system work and to clear some of the backlogs. So just to refresh members' memories, so the projected volumes are expected to pick up quite significantly over the next 2 years. The 2018 was projected to, NSFAS funding to go to 550. When I arrived, there were only 460 NSFAS funded students, 460,000. In the process of clearing up, we found a further 50,000 about that were not on our books or that were not accounted for. So at the moment, we're standing at 510,000. As you will see going forward, because of the introduction of fee-free education, it's expected that those volumes will increase significantly. And this in turn will, of course, place further stress on the education system and the institutions to absorb people that are our students that are eligible for NSFAS funding. And therefore, this planning that we're doing cannot be in the absence or be agnostic of what's happening at institutions. Concomitant to the anticipated increase in projected volumes, we also then expect quite a strong increase in the funding that will be allocated. And therefore, I almost think that this year is a watershed year, that we have to get these systems right because of the large amounts of money that we're going to deal with over the next 2 years. And we'll share some of the thinking around it as we go through this presentation. So when we arrived, we did quite a bit of planning to see how best we can address the significant backlog. And as I've indicated earlier, our indication or our anticipation of this backlog was wholly underestimated. As we worked through this accounts with the different institutions, we found a fair further 50,000 students, and every day we are finding more students that are not accounted for. So just to deal with the whole issue about upfront payments and institutions sitting on cash piles and not paying out to students, what is happening is that about 50% of the allocation was paid out to institutions as an upfront payment, and therefore the accusation that was made was that the students, that the institutions are sitting on the cash piles and they don't get it to the students, and so there was a lot of to and froing. But what was not said, I believe, was that although the money was paid over to the institutions were not provided with remittances so that they can pay out to the correct students. And so many institutions indeed sat on cash piles, and in fact some of them might even have audit problems going forward because they simply just did not know who to pay to and how much they need to pay to and when they need to pay to students. So the whole issue of remittances was left unaddressed. In some cases, institutions made a plan. They looked at registration data, and they would somehow come to some determination of how much they need to pay out to students. But by and large, the lack of remittances caused a severe blockage in the system, and that means that the money could not be transferred properly to students. So that's the first point that we're making here. And that's certainly one of the things that we addressed right at the start, is to develop a remittance infrastructure or infrastructure to deal with remittances so that the monies can be transferred on to students. There was no appeals process, and that is now being developed and is given priority. There was a complete distrust between us and the institutions and the student leadership, and we had to spend a lot of time to secure support from those two stakeholders. In fact, one of the first things I did when I arrived was to write to all the student leadership and to write to all the heads of institutions, introducing myself and asking them for a support in sorting out the backlog. In the case of the universities, I was fortunate, due to my position as the chairperson of WITS, that I was on a first-name basis with many vice-chancellors, and in that way we could secure very good cooperation. And one particular institution stands out. We realized that UNISA was a big problem, and when I called the vice-chancellor, he made his entire financial staff available for us to work with him, and so UNISA is certainly one of our institutions that we made the most progress with. So we also deployed our senior managers to institutions to resolve and reconcile accounts, and that was necessary because there was almost a black hole at NISFAS where information disappeared into with no responses back to the institutions. So the reason why we deployed them is to put them on the ground with the institution, that's number one. And number two, we also made the statement to the senior managers that they need to really look hungry students in the eye and see the conditions that they need to suffer from because of our lack of responsiveness. We approved access for students, and I'll mention it later again, but we immediately introduced the toll-free number. And that speaks to the future design of NISFAS. We must make sure that we design NISFAS to provide for the needs of our target audiences. We deal with poor students, and some of them don't even have money to get to the institution to question or to reconcile their accounts, number one. Number two, they don't even have data to call us, and so we have to make that a priority when we redesign NISFAS going forward. So we had to institute disbursement procedures to deal with this risk control. So the disbursement procedures that were in place, we had to put in an enormous amount of checks at every phase of the payout to make sure that we pay, that as we go through this laborious and labor-intensive processes, we don't pay out to the wrong students. And certainly that is not the way to continue. We need to redesign to make it seamless and much more effective. There were low levels of motivation among staff members when I walked in there the first day, and we had to remind our staff that they don't just have a normal job, but it's a mission that they deal with. And I can say, much to the credit of the NISFAS staff, they responded magnificently. They've been working around the clock, and without their support, we would certainly not have been able to deal with the volumes in the manner that we did. There is a problem with data integrity, and there's a problem with systems integration. And I had to to convince the minister about some of the figures I got in the data integrity expert, at least to get directionally correct numbers. Because these numbers change virtually on a daily basis. As I've indicated, we find students in systems every day that we had no sight of. We also had to manage shareholders' expectations. There was a lot of expectations that things will happen quickly and that the turnaround will happen quickly. And we had to speak to a lot of people to say this is going to be a long and a hard journey and there's got to be no shortcuts. And as I mentioned earlier, the administration of remittances, that's key because you can't keep pay money over to a university and they don't know who to pay on further. So that was also a key priority that we identified at that particular stage. So from the TVET colleges, we just had a meeting with the TVET principals yesterday. At the moment, we have made quite inroads, as we will show with the figures, into the universities, clearing some of the backlog. The big problem still lies with the TVET colleges. Just by way of example, most universities have now used up the upfront payment and they're now in real time, except three universities. But most colleges are still behind the curve. They're still in the upfront payment cycle. And that is because of the large amount of outstanding unsigned contracts. So yesterday was quite an interesting meeting. But we are able to report now that we will be able to process 52,000 top-up payments today and tomorrow to some TVET colleges. We've identified 30,000 unfunded students, which is due to accuracy problems. The results are not correct, or there's a difference between the results that they post and what DHE give us, and we're doing that reconciliation. And the remaining 36,000 unsigned TVET colleges remains a serious concern because colleges are sitting on this cash pile and they can't get the money out to the TVET students. And they will then also then incur track audit findings from that. So we will be meeting with the Auditor General to see to what extent would there be mechanisms that are, of course, within a governance framework to resolve this, because some of the students are just not, we're not going to get hold of them going forward. So within this discussion with the principals, we have established better interfaces. Certainly, the systems are not where it should be. There's very poor integration or no integration with the TVET colleges, and we need to set up those integration. Most TVET colleges have closed down their financial aid offices, so we need to get them restarted. We certainly are not planning to have NISFAS offices on campuses, but we need to find a way to get them to capacitate themselves. Then, of course, one of the key things that especially plagued the TVET sector is the many exception rules that exist in the system. And to program for that is a nightmare. There's no other way to describe it. So as far as possible, we would like to standardize on many of those things and deal with exceptions on the side as opposed to having to code in so many different variations in the rules. At the end of the day, what we would like to have is to have a rule book which is signed off by auditors, which we load onto our system, and that should be the payment that happens on a predictable basis to the students and to the institutions, both parties receiving their statements to know that they can expect money to flow at a particular time. But for that rule book to be effective, we have to standardize as far as possible. And then if there are exceptions, it must be signed off at the highest possible level, or a committee structure must be established. At the moment, the four variations must be signed off by myself until we have some order in the system. So people ask us how much progress we've made. So just by way of example, as at August 21, when the administrator started, we had 507,400 funding decisions that were made for students. We made an additional 6,300 additional funding decisions since then. But as I indicated earlier, we found 43,000 additional students in the month of August that were not on our books. So that brought us to the number that we have now at the moment. As I've indicated earlier, although as of 21st August, 422,000 disbursements were processed, that did not necessarily mean that the money got to the students. It was processed to go out to the institutions. So the disbursements did not necessarily reach the students. The backlog of remittance reports that were generated have now been cleared and they were sent out to the institutions. So in addition to the new students we found, we actually opened up the process and the flow of money that already existed within the institutions to facilitate that them to or assist them to pay through to the students. And so that unblocking was quite an important step forward. We had 30,000 pre-funded students with incorrect bursary values. So these would be students that are the teaching students and social work and so on. We have now matched 14,000 of that, and they are ready to receive funds. And as I speak every day, this figure increases and improves. About 20,000 students did not receive allowance due to backlog caused by the disbursement exception. We have unblocked 9,200. So, as I said earlier, if we look at the statistics, we have caught up in the university sector, and we are now on schedule. By and large, there remain exceptions. The TVETs remain a challenge. But from our discussions yesterday, we believe we can make some progress if we can improve, if we can implement some systemic changes to move us forward. And my colleagues here can talk in a bit more detail to the TVET environment. I will admit first then that it's a fairly new environment for me. So if you look at the statistics, disbursements to date, the provisional allocation for universities is 16.4 billion rand. We have paid out 14.4 billion, of which 2.5 billion happened over the past 2 weeks. And so we are now getting into a real-time cycle. There remains about 2 billion to be paid out to universities, and some of that we don't foresee to be a problem going forward as we start to clear out all these account issues. On the TVET side, the 5.1 billion that was allocated, 2.7 had been paid out, of which 200 million had been generated over the past 2 weeks. And as I said earlier, the fact that a large amount of prepayments happened to the universities did not necessarily mean that the money got to the students. But with us providing our remittances, some of a bigger amount than what's in red at the moment, they actually flow through to the students. So this is the summary. So of course a lot of work needs to be done in the TVET sector. Last night I met with the principal of King Sabata. He caught me and he pulled me one side. And he actually said to me, I'm not going back to the college until I get my money. So luckily yesterday we received approval from the DG's office that we could reallocate funds, and so he's got some money to go back and hopefully avert a strike. We have listed, we have a granular view of the problems per campus, so we know exactly what the status are per campus, about the number of students, total number dispersed, total number outstanding, and we are communicating with all the principal heads and make sure that our data at least is matched or are accurate. So we send this to all the TVET colleges, and they are busy reconciling with us, and as we identify the colleges of the highest priority, we will of course be addressing that first. But the main aim is to address systemic issues, because you cannot continue to address line item by line item. And therefore, in our discussion with the department and with the minister, we have identified some policy issues which I think the department will speak to that will probably make our lives easier, because the more we standardize, the easier we can manage this entire disbursement process. If we can get 99% or 95% of the disbursements to happen through a standardized process, then we will only then need to deal with the exceptions, number one, and with the remainder that then flows, we can deal with that on a risk-based methodology. So this just gives the stats. So before I go there, so one of the innovations that we have now is to do the validation for students whether they qualify for this first. Now in the past we used the credit bureau. I have signed the agreements with SARS and the UIF that we can get data from them for additional sets of validations, and that should improve the validation for students, the eligibility. The idea being is that we upfront determine eligibility and not after students go to the institutions to register, because that creates bottlenecks and all sorts of other problems. So that when we have the eligibility status of the students determined, once they're registered, that it should then match and then trigger the flow through of funds to that institution. my colleagues can fill in if I left off. Just to give an update on the 2019 application status, I said at the same time that we were clearing the backlog, we were also preparing for the application status, for the application season. We open up on the 3rd of September, and we set the closing date to be the 30th of November. So we tested the online application with a group of with a focus group of matriculants, and they were able to complete the applications within five minutes. The feedback that we generally got is that it was easy and user-friendly. As opposed to the past, as we receive applications, we will process them immediately. We won't wait until the season is closed and then start it. So students, prospective students, will receive acknowledgement of their application, and then before the end of this month, they should be within a month, and hopefully going forward, as we get more comfortable that in the short, over a shorter period, they will get the confirmation of eligibility. Not confirmation of funding, but confirmation of eligibility. As I said earlier, we believe that this process will be facilitated by third-party validation from other service providers like SARS, UIF, and SASA. The toll-free number had a massive uptake to the extent that we had to hire more call center operators. And we have to be careful also there because we must make sure that it's not just an initial tidal wave that we receive. We have strengthened institutional collaboration and with leadership. So we're working very closely with the student leadership to assist us, not only with clearing the backlog, but also make sure that they encourage people to register early and not provide bottlenecks going forward. We spoke about the development of student accounts, that the IT people have assured me that they're well on their way, that we will be able to provide in 2019 students upfront with what is the available amount, amount available to them, and the timing as to the flow of funds then throughout the year. And as I said earlier, we streamlined the approval processes. So the NISFAS website, since the 3rd of September, had about 160,000 visits, or just under 160,000. 47 potential applications have created by NISFAS accounts, and then 23 applications for funding were received and I believe successfully processed. We have deployed over 50 NISFAS officials trained and deployed across the country to assist. We have also signed an agreement with the National Youth Development Offices, and that will give us a further footprint or extend our footprint, and we've trained 60 ex-NISFAS students to assist in this youth development offices. We are having discussions with other stakeholders that can assist us. For instance, in the Western Cape, all the libraries have got Wi-Fi, and we are having discussions to make that also a point of registration, or assisted registration, I should say. Students are now able to change the details on the portal, and we believe we have the necessary governance to make sure that there are no deviations from process. The minister has announced that she will provide that the administrator will have access to additional expertise. Up till now, we have not onboarded this expertise. In fact, we started this week onboarding them. It gave me, as the administrator, at least over the past 2 weeks, the opportunity to dig myself into the process and try and understand as much of the inner workings of NISFAS. But we will certainly need financial management expertise. We need to implement stricter financial controls and make sure that we adhere to the provisions of the PFMA Act. We need to make sure that we have reconciliation of our disbursements and the adequacy of risk rules and financial controls are all in place. They are fragile, and I'm being euphemistic here. Process management. I believe that we need to, before we buy any new technology, we need to understand our business and map it properly, so that the solution fits the business needs and not the other way around, that you fashion business needs around available technology. Data architecture needs to be looked at. We need data scientists because our data integrity is of utmost paramount importance, and integrations across institutions. There should be no need for us to transport data disk from one institution to the other or bring data disk to NISFAS. It could be done seamlessly. And we could upload results also seamlessly. But that is what we need to work towards. I've had chats with the SKA, so we are talking. They were there on site yesterday, and I believe that they can go a long way to assist us to design the correct data architecture. This is square kilometer array division. They want to assist us. Systems architecture, our systems design must fit the business and not the other way around, as I said earlier. And then also organizational development. We need to design an optimum operating model. At the moment, we have a management layer that is five deep. So we have the chief executive officer, we have chief of information, a CIO, COO, CFO, then we have general managers under that, then we have senior managers and then managers, and then we only have technical people. So one of the things that I did was to take out one layer, which is the general manager, and I deployed them across the country because we had literally had one-on-one reporting. But that is just an interim step that by no means suggests that we are ready to redesign the institution. We need to redesign it from deep reflection and deep consultation with our stakeholders. This is just my view of NISFAS into the future. And certainly this is a view that I'm testing with most stakeholders that I engage with. We need to empower our stakeholders. So our institutions must be properly empowered and be given proper information to make proper decisions timeously and correctly and at the right time. I believe we should also empower our students. They should be in the loop as to how their money is allocated to them, when they can expect the money, and to some extent even further, to have a say in the decision-making of where they stay. Because if you leave it over to other stakeholders, students then end up living in pigsties or in very undesirable conditions. We also need to empower our policymakers, such as yourselves. We are sitting on an enormous amount of data that can assist with planning and policy formulation. This was into the future. We are representatives of the taxpayers, so we must find ways to make sure that our students are successful. Not just fund them and walk away, but keep institutions accountable for throughput rate and success rate of our students. Process-driven organizations based on logical business design, system integration, data integrity everyone can rely on, and risk assessment using third-party validation. So those are some of the thoughts as I meet with many people, and every day I would add or subtract some from this. I would just sum up by saying that I don't believe NISFAS is a lost cause. I believe that the steps that we've taken show that this institution can be turned around, and that we have the necessary expertise in this country to do it, and that NISFAS must disappear off the radar and be an enabling function, at running it quietly in the background, making sure that universities can concentrate and students can concentrate on what they're supposed to be concentrating instead of worrying about where the next meal is going to come from. There are some policy issues which I've discussed with the minister, and perhaps the minister is here, I see, minister, and at the time when she feels ready to speak about some of those things that will make our lives easier, we can take this forward. So I think I'll stop there, and then I think we will respond to the conversation. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you very much, Dr. Carolison. Welcome to all the additional members. Welcome, Minister. Can I find out from the NASFIS team, is there anyone that wish to add? No? Then can I at the same time, before we engage honorable members, department, anything from your side?
Thank you, Chairperson. We have presented a presentation. However, as the state covered most of it. James, can you?
I can't
hear what you're saying. Yeah, if you can just have the presentation, Minister. Chairperson.
Why don't we, honourable members, whilst you're struggling with all of that, we have a copy in front of us, isn't it?
Okay.
So let's go for it while we struggle with all of that. What is the problem on the wall, Ms. Orley?
Chair, looking through this presentation, it doesn't seem to have anything that we haven't just heard. Gives the history of the administrator, how much has been paid out. Just skimming through it, I'm not convinced that we really need it.
No, let's not do that. Proceed, department.
Chair, Professor Bazzoli is absolutely correct that we were working together with the administrator, and what we are providing was the process in terms of since the administrator has started. So it's just a brief overview in terms of what the four issues were that had to be addressed. So if it's fine with you, then I would want to proceed.
The issue that the department caused the problem also in the processing, in the disbursement, which related to the certificates. That's the issue that you had to speak to.
Okay, Chair, then I will ask Dr. Singh to speak to that issue.
Certificate.
Yeah.
thank you, Chairperson. I will go through the slides. Can we just go further on? And some of the issues, as the executive administrator indicated, Chairperson, the TVET college space is a lot more difficult. And some of the issues are a lot more complex, and that is why the movement is somewhat slower there, because the difficulties in the TVET system lie, by and large, in some instances with the institutions themselves, in as much as, you know, there's momentum in the NSFUS space recently, but some colleges are still struggling. So just very quickly, to give you the picture for TVET colleges, you can see the disbursements are still slower, particularly on the side of the allowances. Tuition is edging closer to the 50% disbursement, whereas allowances still stay below the 25% mark. And overall, it shows that colleges, the total disbursement has been only around 25%, just slightly lower than that. Three colleges in particular have been problematic, and their problems are not confined to the NSFUS process. There are other internal management difficulties which the department is dealing with. But further to this report, we have confirmed that Vuselela, for example, in the Northwest, has dispersed just over $2 million in allowances. And Taleso was seriously hampered by the SOP signing process. The students had not signed, and on 31 August, NSFUS deployed staff to assist the college, and we believe that there will be serious movement with regard to that college. Ingwe is the college that we are currently working with at the moment. They are struggling to get their processes efficient. They had a slow start. Their internal processing was very slow, so the disbursements, to reach the point of disbursements, has taken much longer, but that is where the department is providing support. So in terms of the colleges, we are providing support to the colleges on an ongoing basis. Now we have the support of NSFUS, where we have real problems, and we are monitoring it on a daily basis. Chair, I think the question you wanted answered is actually related to the issues on the next slide. Can we just go to that one? Because what we have found is that institutions that are not disbursing funds, the reasons are not consistent. Different institutions have different reasons. And if we look at the fourth bullet point on that slide, that largely accounts for the slowness of the additional bursary and verification processes that are undertaken at the colleges, particularly in relation to allowances, is what delays the process. Now, that links to what the executive administrator had said about the great number of permutations at the college level in how they award allowances in particular. The tuition portion is fairly pinned down. There's a standard way of determining the tuition payments because they are linked to program costs. But with allowances, There are a great many variations taking into account accommodation. In short, it leaves a lot of the decisions to the institutions themselves, because those decisions are taken within a financial aid committee at the college that involves the chief financial officer, it involves teaching staff, largely student support services staff, and the students. So that process this year has been further delayed by the fact that some colleges did not have their SRC elections on time. And because they did not have legitimate representation from the students, those processes got somewhat delayed. So those kinds of variations have had a serious impact on the college's decision, ability to take those decisions quickly enough. And as the executive administrator has said, that although some of those might be hard decisions going forward, but we might have to pin them down to very clear rules on how the allowances can be made in terms of travel, in terms of accommodation. For example, in terms of travel, the guideline makes provision for travel from 10 kilometers and above, and colleges have made compelling arguments for why the, you know, any walking distance, for example, anything outside of a walking distance should qualify for a travel allowance. So those are the kind of contestations we've had coming through. And although colleges have had the leeway to make those decisions, they themselves have, you know, grappled with those kinds of debates within the institutions, and it has taken much longer. In terms of assisting the colleges, we have our regional offices that have been asked to support the colleges. Where there are problems, they route it via the department. And NSFUS has, in many instances, gone to the institutions to provide support. Another very important point, as has already been mentioned, that colleges no longer have financial aid offices. And the real difficulty is that a big part of this function is being performed by what we call student support services offices. And their real competency only lies in the area of seeing to the needs of students, making those determinations. And their input largely determines what we call the student rules and guidelines document, which we issue to colleges every year. So that really sets out, you know, the provisions for how students should be catered for in terms of the tuition and the allowances. But the actual administration of the financial aid requires a range of integrated skills. It requires support from the data people, the TVETMIS people. It requires some amount of financial management competencies. It requires information management competencies and so forth, which these student financial aid officers do not have. So we are looking at capacitating the colleges once again with the financial aid requirements so that they can, as a team, take responsibility for that. The EA indicated yesterday at the meeting with the principals that there will be dedicated senior managers from NSFAS per region. So we will need to link up with those dedicated senior managers from NSFAS to be able to support the colleges in making sure that they get each of their systems right. One of the big things, Chair, is that going forward in the TVET colleges, because so many students proportionately will qualify for NSFAS, in the region of 95% of the students will qualify, the NSFAS process has to be integrated into the admissions process because most students will qualify.
I'm really sorry to stop you. But when we engage, honorable members, when we engage the department about the submission that they need to make, it was not to piggyback on the NSFAS report. It was to say, at the beginning of the year, when you presented your strat plan and budget to us, in fact, we were in the same room with the NSFAS people, We said that the 2019, the opening of the 2019, goes together with clarity from the department. And the clarity from the department is that the framework agreement that you promised us, which you told us something about the other day when we were in a meeting, which was really telling us you're not there yet, means that we're going to have another problem if the department does not sort out their side of the framework agreement, which clarifies completely that when a student gets money, it's on the basis of whatever the framework says. When you increase the returning student, it's on the basis of all of these things that you have clarified. We don't see anything of that in here. What we also don't see is that when we looked at, I would urge you go back to our report that we had when we had everyone in the room, in there in the meeting up there in Goodhope, as well as in the old assembly chamber. We pointed out in that meeting from the department, this is where you are creating the problem. You do not allow students to get money because you have not issued them with the necessary certificates, which says that they have, they've moved to the next level. I don't hear you saying about all of it, because that was some of the key problems also that caused, from our own investigation into this thing, that caused this problem. So I'm going to ask you not to continue at all and demand that the department write back to us to say, not what Nestor has said, that they are busy doing whatever with the college principals, but that the department are putting the following. Yours is the policy clarity. We need the policy clarity moving forward. We're not having it at all. And that one is key. So Minister, you've opened up. Not you have opened up. The 2019 year is on track to where it was supposed to be in the month of September. And when we met, we said together with opening up allow the 2019 to be opened up in September, we must make sure that at least we're not going to have this thing that people are going to hear in March whether they're going to get the money. And all of that, the department was supposed to see what are the things that they must contribute to make sure that all of it. Now, none of it I see in here. So, honorable members, I trust I'm not ranting and raving unnecessarily in this instance. But that's really my view, that that's what we have said to the department, that they need to report today, and it's not here. I want to find out, and I'm not going to ask you to respond. I'm going to ask you to do what you've asked in the first place. I want to, honourable members, just establish at this point, Minister, is there anything from your side that you want to, because then I want the members to engage in the quantum of the